I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's getting enough speed to crank it up, drop the clutch in first, and then get it running and brake before you hit something in front of you or behind you.
And he said, I had to decide who I wanted to win. I didn't like the other two, so I bumped drafted you. He got second, so...
It's that ability to just sit with the pencil and then create a model and then, you know, create these lasts on which people tap this metal. I would love to be able to do that.
Hello and welcome to the Collecting Addicts podcast, episode number 53. If I look like I'm sitting in a car and I sound like I'm in a tin box, it's because I am. I apologize, but I didn't make it home in time. My fellow addicts should not have any more of their gracious time wasted by a dickhead in a yellow Porsche. So let's get on with it straight away. What is the best startup procedure for a motor car? This has got legs because there are so many great startup procedures. I'm going straight into Neil Clifford, who I suspect has owned most of them.
Well, I don't, but I own a very good startup procedure car, which is the most gorgeous Bob Peterson Bentley.
Ooh.
Made in officially one of the best counties of the UK, in Devon. And it's not a replica or it's not a sort of anything bad like that. It's a Singer Bentley. It's a Bentley blower with extra bits. Bloody fantastic. And if you want to cheer yourself up, go and buy one. They're brilliant. So how you do it, and there's a whole A4 piece of paper on how to start this car, and it never fails. But what you have to do is you pull out the ignition, and there are two fuel pumps. You have to pull out both little fuel pumps. You then have to obviously give the throttle two or three big giant pumps, but you then turn off the ignition and you then got a little flip up, like you're flying a lightning jet, a little flip up button, one of those ones with the covers.
Oh, the safety, little red safety cover thing.
The safety one, because the fuel tank is obviously right in the back, which the back is like 24 meters behind you, but the engine obviously is in the front. So you turn off the ignition, and what you then do is you press the starter button, which is pumping the fuel up to the engine, but without...
Presumably through a hose pipe?
No, through a highly technical titanium, okay. I'm sure it's made of, pipe. Takes the fuel all the way to the engine, and then what you do is, as you've done that for 4 or 5 seconds, you then pull out the ignition again. You must have pulled out the choke. I've forgotten the choke. The choke is just underneath the dashboard, but the choke only stays on for about 4 seconds. You leave the choke on for a long time, it all gets a bit puffy and all a bit sort of asthma-like because you've got too much fuel, whatever's going on. So you then pull out the ignition and bang, 100% guaranteed start on the button. And it's the most gorgeous heart-rendering loveliness of starting procedures, and then off you go. You press the choke in within 5 seconds, and you know, 80 miles an hour in second.
Wow.
Wonderful.
Everyone should go and visit the Peterson, I don't know what the bloody website is, Peterson Bentley website.
We should definitely go and do that.
Christopher Cooper, tell us about your favourite startup procedure.
Well, I knew that Neil would have just the best mechanical, electrical, beautiful startup, and that was lovely. And we have to see that either down in Devon or somewhere in the middle. I got two. Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you. We can hear you.
Cool. Okay, so Neil Clifford, a delightful story about his beautiful Peterson Bentley. I'll now step on Chris Cooper's toes, who thought he was assuming the role of being the coordinator, but he's not. So, Chris Cooper, you tell us about your start procedure now.
As I was just saying before I was really interrupted.
You bloody Judas!
I've got two.
I'm away for a minute and you're in my seat. The bed was still warm.
It wasn't me, Gov, it was him.
The bed was still warm.
Boss Eduardo. I've got two.
Whistling.
It's amazing how simple but lovely the startup procedure is in a Porsche 962. It's just a key. It's just a key, like a 964 or a 993 key. It's just a key. You put it in ignition, you turn it, you crank it, it fires and it starts. It almost doesn't get better for that than me. That's the starting procedure we all know, and it still works in one of the greatest ever racing cars ever made. You could go and buy, you could take your trailer down there, buy it, pay your money, pass check over. They give you two sets of keys, a little bit of a key fob, all those forms you had to fit in, that to fill those forms in those days, all the regulatory stuff. The one that's really, really weird, and I still don't quite understand it, is how weird it is to start up my Mini Maverick. This is this Mini, 1962 Mini, that's been modified, resto-modded by Swift Tune. All of my motoring career, my common sense has been, it's easier to start a car if you put your foot on the clutch just to reduce the drag when the car's starting in the gearbox. Yeah. In the Maverick, it doesn't work. You leave your foot off the clutch. If you try and put your foot on the clutch to start it, it's like the battery's half flat. I've asked Mr. Swift, why is that? And he gave me a really complicated explanation I didn't understand. So the weirdest startup procedure is when you're trying to start a Mini Maverick, you don't put your foot on the clutch. That Mini race car monkey you drove, forthcoming episode of Landau Laps.
Yes, yes.
Watch this space. There's a rather comedic part in that where I try and explain to you why you shouldn't put your foot in the clutch, but I couldn't remember.
No. And I couldn't work it out either, but it does make sense. When you try
it does make a difference. So I think 962 or Mini Maverick, don't put your foot in the clutch, which is against somebody hopefully will write in, an engineering expert or colossus will write in and explain to us why that's worked. I don't understand it. It's voodoo.
Useful consumer advice from the addicts. See, if you've got a Mini Maverick, one of the seven that exist, then we can help you to start it. Manish, what's your favourite startup procedure ever?
There was a little period of time about a year ago on this podcast when Mr. Clifford would send us some startup procedures on the WhatsApp group. And there's one which I just will never forget. It literally said, because I woke up relatively early that day, like 6 a.m. But this startup procedure, I think, was like 5:19 a.m. The sun had just come up over Tring. And you could hear the words, fuck, bollocks. And he was fumbling to find the key to the car. But the next thing that happened was the phone was still on. We were just looking at actually Mr. Clifford's rather shapely calves because he was wearing a dressing gown and slippers, but not a lot else.
Yeah.
And these things were just walking forever and ever and ever. And we were thinking, gosh, he lives in a pretty grand palazzo. And finally, through some doors, you sat down. I think it was either. Do you have a Bristol 410 or an 11?
I did.
I think it was. It was that car. It was brilliant. So then the keys go into the door. The door opens. These feet, now we can see his knees find their place in the seat. And you see him put the key in. And the whole thing, you see it go halfway and then nothing happens. And then it does it again, nothing happens. And you see these feet sort of slightly moving. You don't know if things are being pumped or braked or whatever. And then it goes again and it goes, fuck. And then there's a pause and he goes, this is the fun of it. This is the whole point about doing this. Then there's another pause and he goes, this is like therapy for me. This is therapy for me. It still doesn't start. It still doesn't start. And then he uses the collecting cars C word, which is the C word with an IO at the end to describe this beautiful Bristol. Then he has one more go at this and you hear. And he goes, that was really, really satisfying. And he turns the engine off and walks back to the kitchen. That is the world's greatest ever startup procedure.
Neil, with your permission, can we post that video again?
Yeah, I'll get it. Good.
The best bit was, I'm not sure Manish's microphone worked then. So anyone listening and watching, it just went like this.
Yeah,
no, it started with Neil talking about he just built it up perfectly for a fall. It was like the commentator goes, "This beautiful piece of English engineering, it never fails to start."
It just
goes, and as the battery slowly shits itself, it gets slower and slower.
I find the video.
It's just old cars, isn't it?
Oldcars.com.
Ed would love it.
So I always thought there was a particular way to start an early 911, and it would normally be ignition on, couple of pumps of the throttle, and hopefully it'll fire up. And they generally sound in the first crank, it sounds like it's not going to fire up, and it eventually does. Until I went up to Tuttle a couple of years ago, and it was early in the morning, and Richard's way of starting an early 911 is just bury the throttle, crank it, and just keep it buried until it spits smoke and oil and everything out.
It's a metal.
Yeah, exactly. So I've learned Richard's way of starting a 911. I think a 60s Ferrari turning on the ignition, turning on the fuel pump, and letting the fuel pump churr away, just tick, 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 and the ticking slows down until the fuel pump's full, and then cranking's a pretty wonderful way to start a car. But actually, my favourite startup procedure is a car where the battery doesn't work and the jumps. Ooh. And the jump start. And ideally, the jump start with only one person to help you push the car, or maybe no one to help you push the car. So you can't really get enough speed up to use second, and you've got to use first or reverse. That's my favorite one. And then because the wall might be in front of you, it's getting enough speed to crank it up, drop the clutch in first, and then get it running and brake before you hit something in front of you or behind you. That's probably the art of jump starting is my favourite starting procedure.
I almost need to stop you there and say, on reflection, we need to have a totally separate conversation about best jump starting stories. I bet we've all got some.
We've got to do that.
When one's father's pushing one's, you know, first car, they get their leg, their Farrah trousers caught in your Mini's wheel, and God knows all that shit. So I think the startup procedure might be the sexiest thing that a car can give us, because it's anthropomorphic, isn't it? It's almost like something coming to life. It's a snoozing animal that's suddenly coming to life. It's a very romantic thing. And I separate it in sort of ancillary activities. So you've got fuel pumps being primed. You've got potentially starter motor, all the starter motor noises. I mean, there's some amazing starter motor noises out there. We all know there are starter motors and there are starter motors. So I love listening to things like a Pagani Zonda 7.3S. That starter motor sound,
yeah,
it's the car's worth it for that alone. It's just the sexiest sound. And I love hearing early Bosch K-Jetronic systems, as they have that lovely sort of whizzy noise, that under the bonnet. And I love hearing fuel pumps in the boot of racing cars.
Yeah.
But there's only one car for me. Well, that watching that BRM 16-cylinder piece of lunacy start up at Goodwood that's more aerospace than car. That just looks like it might kill someone. So I stand and watch it, but I keep my distance just in case a lick of flame comes out. But I remember watching an amazing video 10 years ago of an old 917 being started. It was on YouTube. It did the rounds, and it's just this band of people that have spent ages bringing this beautiful flat 12 to life. And it was amazing. And it reminds you actually that it takes ages sometimes to coax these things alive. There's smoke coming out, but they're all getting gassed. And I thought to myself, I'd never see that in my life. But then Edward and I can't believe he's not mentioned this. Edward and I last summer were somewhere where Bruce Canepa had to bring a turbocharged flat 12 917-10 to life to go out on track. And he spent 10 minutes getting it going from a sort of spluttering mess with shit flying out the back of it to just, with his hand on the throttle linkage, just blasting this thing so it was getting heat in it. It was extraordinary to watch it come to life. It was like Manish would understand what it's like to try and resuscitate a human being. I've no idea what that's like. I don't want to be dismissive or disrespectful to doctors, but there was something doctor-like, the qualities of which he sort of was managing the air going in, the fuel going in, squirting stuff. It was a magical thing to watch. So for me, yeah, a Porsche flat 12 turbo coming to life with sort of tweaks and tickles. You might have just been doing it for theatre, but it certainly got me.
Yeah.
Mega.
Very good.
Right, hold on. Here we go. My phone is really dying here. I'm going to get in trouble in a minute. So whose job, it's a great question. This is posed by Mr. Cooper. Whose job in the motorsport or automotive industries would you most like to have? Let's start with Neil Clifford, because he is the chief executive officer.
I've got my CEO buttons here.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Which can be, you can answer any strategic issue with these buttons. You either do this.
I said no.
Or?
Sure thing.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's my job.
That's it for training.
Yeah, it's really good. So where would I take my buttons? Well, I think the best job, which is not my answer, I think Andreas Preuninger has got the best job.
Yeah.
So if you just wanted the best job of anyone in the automotive, probably that's like a really cool job, right? You're just running all the GT cars. I know Chris knows him very well. He comes across.
I'll tell you what, if he listens to this, he'll be shaking his head going, it's too stressful. Why would anyone want my job?
You only see the fun bit of it, yeah.
We can all say the bad bits of our job, but you know what? I bet he wouldn't give it up.
Yeah.
That's probably the best job. But if I like challenges and I love the United Kingdom, and I don't really want to live anywhere else apart from the United Kingdom, even though, you know, you wish the taxes were lower and the NHS was better or whatever. I think we live in the best country in the world. So therefore, it would have to be one of the automotive brands, the United Kingdom. And because I love a challenge, it would probably be Aston Martin.
Well, they're looking for someone, Neil. So let's get him on there. Come on, boys and girls.
I don't think I'm old enough.
No.
You've got to be 70, haven't you?
Yeah, you've got plenty of time.
How old is Felice, though? Does anyone know how old he is?
76 till I retire. No, I think that's a mega job. That's a mega job.
It would be a good job.
Yeah it's a great job. So in all seriousness, it would be that job.
Right. Chris Cooper, if my phone's moving around, it's because I'm trying to do something very clever and move to my laptop in the car. This is a high-stakes move. So, Chris Cooper, whose job in the automotive or motorsport industry would you most like to have?
Well, I was thinking about this because sort of an acquaintance who, I'm trying to remember what his name was. Some job he's got, I can't remember quite who I was thinking of. I'm just holding a can of energy drink to the camera for those listening on audio. The answer to this question is, and I'm holding up a copy of Autosport magazine to the camera for those listening, is the man driving that car.
Mika Häkkinen, is that that?
No, close. Coulthard? Close, not David Coulthard. His name is Rob Garofalo.
Okay.
Or to a certain group of us, quite a few years ago, racing driver Rob. So when I started Caterham Racing, quite a long time ago, we were all racing, a bunch of mates got together, we're racing these Caterhams. We were all pretty rubbish. And the people running the team said, we need to get somebody in who knows what he's doing. So they brought in this bloke, Rob Garofalo, and we all called him Racing Driver Rob, because he was a proper racing driver. And he showed us how to drive his Caterhams. And he and I raced together a few years, and he taught me a lot about how to drive a Caterham. In fact, he was one of the wins I had in my 2001 Caterham series. I won because he bump drafted me across the line at Brands Hatch Grand Prix Circuit. We were three abreast going across the start-finish line. He was in fourth. And he said, I had to decide who I wanted to win. I didn't like the other two, so I bump drafted you. He got second. So after that, he got a job. So he is now McLaren Heritage's chief test driver. And I sent one of the links to you guys a while ago. He now tests all of McLaren's F1 cars, everything that they do. All of the stuff goes up the hill at Goodwood. He put on his Instagram last week, he was at Pembury shaking down a Senna F1 car. And he said in the launch, he said, that's 88 F1 cars I've tested now and counting.
Wow.
That's the bloke whose job in the motorsport industry I'd love to have. So, Rob, if you're listening to that, gets a job.
That's a good job. I don't know if Chris is there, Manish, but he'll come back. Over to you.
I'm not so sure that I imagined what bump drafting was, but it certainly wasn't involved in a racing circuit.
Bump drafting. Bump drafting is when the bloke comes along behind you, literally as you're going along, hits the back of your car, you get shot forward, and he gets sucked along behind you.
Oh, he's probably quite similar to what touches you. He touches you.
Physically touches you. Yeah. Like, you know, top whack. So it might actually be quite similar to what you were thinking of, Neil.
Did you see bump drafting or bum drafting?
Bump drafting.
Oh, okay, we can hear you now, Chris.
What about this? Hold on. I'm sorry. Danny might have to check this, but I've just managed to make my laptop work in the car.
Sounds good.
It is working, and the volume's better. Manish is about to tell us who he's going to be. Your dog's awoken as well.
There he is. Hello, Pip. Sorry, he's in the pasture suit me. Right. Okay. So, Manish, whose job would you most like?
I would love if I had the skill. And I had the eye, and I had the hand. I would love to be Marcello Gandini. I would love to have designed some of the most beautiful cars in the world. And that, just honestly, he, you know, I've seen interviews with him, and it's the versatility, but it is the art. And it's not a, for him, it must be a very, very beautiful thing. I guess Pininfarina obviously had it, all the greats had it. The idea that somebody gives you a chassis and there's an engine and you've got some concept of the seating configuration, and if this thing has got an engine in the front, you know, you've got a drive shaft going through, so you've got a little lump and where it goes, and you sit there and you look at it, and you must just look at this little thing from every single angle, and you understand contemporary design. I mean, like, you really, really understand it. And I don't know if it's one person nowadays, or even probably in the 80s, who absolutely goes from alpha to omega with these cars. But I think Gandini, kind of at his prime, he would have been, you know, like an early Giorgio Armani. Just look at this model's shape. Just look at, you know, look at her feet, look at her proportions, and just dress her. And I think to be able to do that, and to integrate that also with the guys who did the great interiors, especially when they had a little bit of cash, maybe not too much, because that obviously produces, you know, all of these fantastic houses. It's that ability to just sit with a pencil and then create a model and then, you know, create these lasts on which people tap this metal. I would love to be able to do that.
If you couldn't do that job, because that is a great job to do, and that would be really, really wonderful. If you couldn't do that particular designer's job, could we all vote for you to do Jerry McGovern's job instead?
Don't bring Jerry into this. We were having a nice chat there as well, Chris.
Sorry, you know, but needs must.
Yeah.
But I prefer your choice.
We need less, Jerry. We need less Jerry.
Can you imagine the food? You know, you do a job like that during the day, you go into your rather beautiful Italian villa in the evening, you have your pasta and vegetables, a little glass of wine, start again the next day. I could do that job 7 days a week. Yeah. No problem at all. No holidays.
Yeah.
Chris Cooper, whose job would you like?
He's done his. He's done mine.
Sorry. Edward Lovett, whose job would you like, other than being CEO and founder?
or his dad's job.
I've warned you today, Chris, you need to be careful when you're taking the piss out of me and who you're doing it in front of.
Anyone that can write founder at the bottom of an email with a straight face has got my vote. You've got any job, mate.
Yeah.
Well, I've written a few down here, and I think obviously the obvious ones would be things like head of the GT department at Porsche or the head of BMW M.
Yeah.
Because you're sort of not the CEO and you're in the really really fun part of the business. The cynical side of me I want to be the head of Porsche allocation for the GT department.
Me first.
Yeah, exactly.
Boris Johnson's king of the world, you two.
I think Chris Cooper's got it right with his choice, because the obvious thing to say would be, well, just to be CEO of Ferrari, surely that's got to be the ultimate automotive job. Now, I know you're shaking your head, but we'd sort of think that, especially in the Montezemolo era. You know, he was more powerful than God, you know, and look how he's perceived today. But yeah. I'm just not sure you'd want to be the CEO of any of these automotive companies. I think it would be a brutal job. And I think if you can quietly be the sort of the cool dude test driver of the best department, I think that would be a hard job to beat. If your job was just driving your favorite cars every day, that would be.
Can you imagine what it would be to say something like that to your dad just before you go off to boarding school? Daddy, I would like to be Sergio Marchionne. That's what I would like to do. Yeah. Can you just imagine?
Tell you what, lads, my multitasking is so good at them. My old phone, everyone loves my little old phone, is overheating because it can't do the tethering thing. So it just went down to 2%. I've just put my aircon on and I'm holding it and cooling it against the vents. This is the ultimate mobile studio.
It's amazing.
It's the greatest car ever. Right. So I reckon I'm a lucky boy. I've witnessed more people in the automotive industry, in the motorsport industry, in top roles when I have been a jobbing journalist. I've interviewed them, spent time with them. And I think there are so many cool jobs. It confirms why we love cars. And as a call to action, even though the industry is in a state of flux and change at the moment, if you love cars, you don't have to be a road tester in an auto car. There are so many great things to do in the car industry. And as long as it gets you close to your passion, it's the most fulfilling place to work. It doesn't matter. You might end up not with the job in the car industry that you wanted or thought you'd have, but it's a wonderful place to work with some great people around you. The best ones I've seen. Sebastian Loeb and his pomp. Being Sebastian Loeb, the Sebastian Loeb rally driver, when he was three championships in, I watched him eat a three-course meal served by a Michelin-rosetted chef somewhere in a Welsh forest. He then had a fag, got in the car, barrel-rolled it with a journalist in it, walked to the end of the stage, got in a helicopter and left. And I thought that was quite
a good job.
I thought that Luca... I don't want to confuse being the person with the job. I wanted to be Luca, but that was separate to the Ferrari job. Luca could have been running an ice cream van and I'd still want to be him. So I almost separate the man from the job. Andreas Breuninger's job is sensational, but I don't think any of us quite understand the skill set he has, the way that he's effectively running a renegade bunch of children that want to make incredible cars with a board that wants to make, you know, Panameras and Macans. The skill set there must be incredibly difficult to navigate. I reckon the two I've seen that make me think that they are the best jobs, I'll say there's two of them. The second, and this should have been the first, but the second is when Wolfgang Dürheimer was the boss of Porsche R&D. In other words, you're the boss of Weissach, which is the heart of Porsche. He said he had the best job in the world to be in an interview, and I think he was right. And he described it like this. He said, this is the only place, I think, on the planet where we can make a car starting with the first bolt. He said, I have everything at my disposal here to make a motor vehicle like a GT3, and I don't need to leave this facility. I can basically machine the first bolt in my machining factory. I can make the entire engine, the chassis, the suspension, and I have a test track here as well. And I have the best engine.
Amazing.
I have the best job. But his job is pipped by one person. And that was the test track, Goodyear's test track at Miraval, which was designed as a Formula One track. And Goodyear bought it, and they just used it to test tyres. And Beltoise's brother used to work there, right? And he would wake up, you'd watch him, he'd wake up, he'd arrive, have a fag, drive around the wet handling circuit for a bit, beautifully, sideways, bit of dry handling. Then they'd all stop at midday for a three-course sit-down meal with wine. And then they'd do a few hours in the afternoon, and that was their working day. That is the greatest job I've ever seen anyone have. Tire testing, all day. All he did was drive, but they always had a three-course meal with clean linen and red wine.
I couldn't think of anything worse.
I like
driving, but not that fast.
Right, lost my notepad. Here we go. So the next one is this is in the context of suspension and spring rates. Are modern cars too stiff? Edward Lovett.
Mainly, yes. Especially sports cars. I would say they are too stiff. They're overtired. Is that a good? Is that a journalistic statement? Overtired.
Yeah, it could be.
But the antidote is just to go to Richard Tuttenham and get him to build you the ultimate Porsche road car, and he'll damp it perfectly for you.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. Yeah. Who's got
one of those?
Who'd like one of those?
Who would like one of those, yeah.
Neil Clifford.
I suppose they are, really. I think they probably are. I do, when you get in an old car, the one thing you do think, actually, most of it's shittier than a new car, apart from the ride. I like the soft, squidgy ride. You get in a 70s Mercedes, or frankly, even a 80s Porsche, whether it's because it's got the bigger tyres or it's just softer, it's just sort of nicer to drive on the road at sensible, cruisy little speeds, isn't it? The one thing I do think, you know, I do have the fortunate position to own a modern-ish Bentley, and it's quite lovely. But if you get in a new Porsche or new Ferrari or new mostly anything, it is a bit bloody bumpy and a bit harsh. And the journalists always seem to blame that. So you can help me on this, Chris, on the British roads. It's always about the British roads. And is that because these cars are mainly made in Germany and everything's beautifully soft, not soft?
Smooth.
I think there's some truth in it. I remember Porsche several years ago saying we're no longer interested in making cars that work on British roads because your British B roads are the worst in the world. So why would we? For a while they accommodated us, but then you'll know which era car it was. 901 GT3 comes along, it's like, well, clearly they don't care. I think that's a fair comment.
I think the British roads thing always comes up. I've got this new little, well, it's not new, it's new to me, Alpine. And it's bloody lovely on British roads. There's no stiffness to it whatsoever. I think that's taught everyone a bloody lesson that you don't, there are times to be stiff, and maybe driving a car isn't one of them.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
No comment. Chris Cooper.
Follow that. So this caused an unholy row in the Cooper household when we discussed it with Finlay and Cameron and me. And I said, their first saying was, who the bloody hell suggested that? And I said, well, your esteemed father. I said, are you demented? And I said, well, I think they are a bit, aren't they? And they were adamant they're not. And they said, if you have your way, Dad, then you'll end up with cars you'll hate to drive. And that's the conundrum, really. That is a conundrum. I mean, I've got an Alpine A110, and it is a lesson in wheel travel and compliance. And there's a gear, and again, Monkey, you know, and I, in fact, you introduced me to him, very sadly departed Graham Gleeson, who was this wonderfully eccentric, mad New Zealander who was into bike racing. And he came to the UK quite a long time ago now. And he had just the most mercurial, magician-like view of suspensions and setup and all those kind of things. And he had this fundamental view that cars were too stiff and you should have compliance in them. And he developed the suspension for the yellow Porsche that we raced at the Nürburgring for years and years and years. And his view was wheel travel, compliance, because that will give you grip, will give you confidence. And when other people drove our car at the ring, they said, what's wrong with your car? It's far too soft. And I said, what do you mean it's too soft? It doesn't feel like a racing car. Okay, drive it and then see how fast it goes. People said it was just a different kind of view as to how, I mean, the car that we gave him was a standard Porsche 997 Gen 1 Cup car. He took it to his workshop in Exeter and he looked at all of the spring rates and damper rates. And he said, your car has stiffer springs than the JCB diesel world land speed record car I worked on in the salt flats. And last time I checked, the salt flats are quite flat and quite smooth. There are no corners. You don't need stiff suspension. Your car, so it's got, you know, your Porsche has got stiffer springs than that. And that thing weighs 4 tons. So it's just all wrong.
Was that a factory setup? Straight from the factory.
And there were people in Germany, Mantai, Olaf Mantai. There were guys who drove for Mantai, who drove our car, said, Olaf would not let you have this car in his garage. He would say it's far too soft. So I think the McLaren these days, a 720S, you'd say, I've not driven very much, but they've just got one, they've got a bit of a balance and of ride softness, and they still handle. So I think I'm torn on this one because I'm, Edward, I'm a bit like you. I do think modern 911s, GT3, 992 Touring, it's quite stiff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
It's quite
stiff. To be honest with you, that's the only car I've got in my mind when I'm talking about the stiffness, because there's many cars out there.
That's the point where on a track, you know, even at Castle Coombe, we went there in September, it's a bit bouncy. And driving up, because I go to Bicester quite a lot for Motorsport UK, and that A41 is bad now because of HS2. So this, it's a plea, really. And the A110 is a good example of it. And you're right. I mean, I love driving it in town, in London, because it's very small. And the potholes and the sleeping policemen, it glides over sleeping policemen like they're not there. So, I think there's a... I think in many cases, they are too stiff. I think we've lost...
My response was very short-sighted, because actually the absolute contrast to something like a 992 GT3 Touring is something like a 720S or a 750S, which is like an S-Class with a rocket launcher in the back of it.
I'd love a Dakar 911.
Yeah.
Because I think that would give you 95%, 99% of the on-road enjoyment, and it would just be like a limo over some of the...
I think that's right.
Hold. Yeah. So, and just having a bit of choice.
Spanish, how do you feel about stiffness?
when I was a kid, Volvo is far too squidgy, far too squidgy.
Yeah.
And all American cars, way, way, way too squidgy. Hated them, especially sitting in the back. I would always throw up, actually, in the back of a big Volvo. Somewhere the French worked out how to create hydropneumatic suspension. Every Citroën that I was ever in the kind of 80s and early 90s, I always thought was just wonderful, completely wonderful. They did exactly what your Alpines do, which is why encouraging me to buy one. I mean, they just do sound absolutely incredible. And is it a French thing to want to have a kind of absolutely superior ride? Because you've been talking about the Germans, haven't you, a little bit here. And what I would say, though, is I was driven in a GTC4 Lusso from Maranello to Bologna Airport. And I got into this car at the front, and it was a Ferrari test driver who did the driving, so it wasn't me. And I sat in the passenger seat, and I really didn't enjoy the drive at all, not even a bit. It was just...
Stiff, too stiff, you mean?
Oh, I thought it was way too stiff. And I mean, you know, I'm middle-aged, but I'm not that middle-aged. And I'm just...
Had he pressed the bumpy road button, Neil? Had he pressed the bumpy road button?
I don't think he'd pressed it.
No.
It's only for British roads, that button, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
You know, we went past these sort of rather gorgeous vineyards, and there were all the little small towns between sort of Maranello and Bologna. And I really didn't particularly enjoy the ride. I mean, the interior was gorgeous, but the ride, so I felt a bit too stiff. I don't know. Now I'm really falling in love with this Alpine 110. Just do it tonight.
Proper car. Yeah, do it tonight. There we go. Yeah.
Do it tonight. Get stiff tonight.
Well, I'm surprised people aren't being more equivocal, because I think there's no doubt that cars are too stiff. I just don't get it. I've got my... I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist on this, and I could probably talk about it for an entire podcast. So I'll spare you that pain. But the reality is, if I flip what Neil Clifford quite rightly just said on its head, motor cars have progressed in just about every area. They are faster, more efficient. They accelerate harder. They go faster. But they're less comfortable. Comfort is an absolutely integral part of most people's driving. In fact, without realizing it, most people place comfort probably second on their list of priorities. The first would be how good the car looks, then how comfortable it is. Far, far above steering feel and such bollocks as, you know, and handling. And most people aren't nerds like us. They don't care. They want something comfortable.
Yeah.
And most cars just aren't. If you get an E39 on a 15-inch wheel and a 528i and drive down a road, that is so much more comfortable than any modern saloon car. I think what happened was car makers decided to push it a bit too far with the marketing departments to go up on rim sizes.
Yeah, 17, rim size. 18,
19. Then you got the low, super low profile tire. What's the one component on a car that a car maker can afford to spend nothing on because no one can see it and it's not sexy? Springs and dampers. So you'll end up, you know, if you knew, I took a Camaro Z28 from 2015 to a well-known sports car maker. That was a very stiff car, but it had some very expensive components on it. It had a carbon ceramic front disc, and it had Multimatic's very trick dampers off a Ford GT on it. And this car maker said, Ford could do that because they've got a deal with Multimatic, but we have never spent that much money on a damper unit in our, and we never would, because there's no benefit to us at all. We get the car we want. All of you think it's great. But ultimately, all the suspension you buy aftermarket is so much better than the shit we put on at OEM. Wow. So yeah, they are mostly quite cheap components. They're, the very upper end, they're starting to spend money on dampers now. But really, the fixed rate stuff they had for years was
so junk. One of the things that Graham Gleason, so his business, he very sadly died very suddenly of a heart attack. Edward, I mentioned this to you earlier. Before we end tonight, I'm going to just tell a story about a car that's on the auction site at the moment for a dear friend of ours who similarly died very suddenly. But one of the things that Graham's dampers have, XTC, they have, there's a cylinder and there's a piston the damper goes into. And the stiction's a great word. It's kind of onomatopoeia. You kind of know what it means. So he had these roller bearings. So there was almost zero stiction. So if there's a change in load, the damper
components moved rather than stuck for a bit and then sort of jerked a bit. And he clearly spent squillions on them. We were so blessed to have him develop our car. And I just, you say, there are exceptions to this, because I think you bang on, Monkey. Mark, I know it's getting a bit old now. Mark 7.5 Golf. We've got a Mark 7.5 Golf 1.4 TSI in the family. That rides. That is such a comfy car to drive. I had to have one car that was pretty modest to do city driving, motorways, okay, fun, I'd have a Golf 1.4 TSI.
Why do people put up with such poor ride comfort? Most cars are just uncomfortable. You know, you get in it and they crash around, they smash into potholes. Like Manish describes, you get in a Lusso, for God's sake. You know, the clue should be in the title, and actually it rattles your teeth out. And I've bored people with it. I'll tell you a quick story about Graham Gleeson with his wonderful suspension. We once went to Atlanta to do a track event, and he had a load of cars there that were running a suspension, and he bought spare damper tubes out and stuff to take to these clients. And we got to Atlanta Airport and we went to collect them. And these police came out with customs people. And they went, yeah, we've taken that. You're not having it back. And we went, Graham with his New Zealand accent went, why, mate? And they went, because it looks like an RPG. And that was it. They said, it looks like armaments. And there's no way you're going to persuade us those tubes are for dampers. So go away. And we never got them back. We turned up with no suspension.
Where they hand you a bazooka with a packet of cornflakes.
On reflection, they didn't look good. It wasn't a good, you know, they did look a bit, yeah. Yeah. Okay, here we go. So, what is your favourite Daihatsu? I think it's important that sometimes we remind ourselves that this is not a serious podcast. So, I don't reckon Manish even knew what a Daihatsu was before I asked him, before, or the fact that it's now wholly owned by Toyota. I only realised that from 98 when I Wikipedia'd it the other day. I love that. So, Manish, what's your favourite Daihatsu?
How dare you? How dare you? Although, with Mel, how dare you? It is actually one I can answer, not through ownership, but through extensive use. Yep. It is the Daihatsu Terios. It is our Tokyo car.
That is wonderful.
Yeah. That is the car. Basically, this car found its way to Tobago at some point at the turn of the millennium. They're all reconditioned, all the ones out there. They're all sort of ex-Japanese cars. They come out. And the thing about this car is, I'm not sure you would off-road with it, okay? But what's brilliant about it, it's a genuine 4x4. It's so narrow, this car. This definitely is wife, driver, daddy, and car seat. And even Darcy, at the age of 14 months, was struggling in the back for leg room. I mean, it's a small car, but they are fantastic. They touch wood, they don't break down. They got any hill. They do have a bit of body roll. Occasionally, you do feel a bit nervous, but I've never flipped one. If you just go off-road a little bit, you have a little muddy track down to a beach or something, absolutely fantastic. Adequate air conditioning, adequate power, one tank of petrol for a two-week holiday. You can get the sand off the seats because the seats are actually really well-made cloth. I mean, you can get the sand off the seat and get the back absolutely soaked as you put your towels and other sort of crap in. And the thing starts up every time, and it is just, it's a beautiful car. It is out
of I did not realise I'd be inciting a love letter to the Daihatsu Terios.
Yeah,
I love that.
That's what the addicts are all about. Neil Clifford, what's your favourite Daihatsu?
I have no fucking idea.
Ed would love it. What's your favourite Daihatsu?
Can I just say one thing? Oh, my God, I have no idea about Daihatsu. I've never looked at them. First time in the history of this bloody podcast, I've had to use Google to get to an answer. Every other answer for 53 weeks has been in my head, apart from this stupid bloody question. So I go on to Google, right, the Daihatsu website. Daihatsu sales have now ceased across Europe.
Yeah.
Sales of Daihatsu motors have now ceased. However, we wish to reassure the Daihatsu owners that all after-sales services, there's none for sale.
You can't buy
one of these bloody things.
You know why?
No.
There's a safety scandal. There's a safety scandal.
Is there?
Toyota or somebody's been cheating on safety tests. It came out end of last year.
No, oh, I read that. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry.
For the sake of collecting cars lawyers, can I say allegedly?
Allegedly, yeah. Thank
you. Oh, yes. But the CEO came out and admitted it, didn't he?
Basically.
They've all admitted it. Yeah, they said, I'm very sorry, we lied, basically. For that, the whole of the time, it was all bullshit. There's no airbags.
I just wanted a one-word answer so we could get it out of the way. We've had a love letter. Now we're talking about espionage. Come on, work with me.
There's no way it could have been a scandal early on in the Daihatsu life of the Taft. And the Taft, which is a tough, almighty four-wheel transport. That is what it stands for.
Which is brilliant.
Which, exactly, that is the Daihatsu Taft. That's what it stands for. And whilst I did delve into Google to do some research, when we talk about having a little house down by the sea or something like that, which is probably going to get rotten with sand and salt and water and all those sorts of things, or up in the mountains. Up in the mountains in France, they love things like Fiat Panda 4x4s, but the old ones, a little hack. I can imagine being a ski instructor and having a Daihatsu Rocky and throwing my skis on the roof and dropping it in 6 meters of snow at the bottom of the ski lift before I go and do my lessons during the day. So good for you, Daihatsu. Don't worry about the scandal. We're on your side.
We are.
Chris Cooper.
So I'm totally with Manish. I think the Terios is just the loveliest little... It's a Japanese Panda 4x4.
Yeah.
It's just it looks perfectly formed. It's like a real car, slightly smaller.
Would you have that or a Subaru Justy?
I'd have a Terios.
Oh, okay, interesting.
I tell you what, if I had to have a two car, if I had to have a functional workaday ski resort, you know, doing practical things, I'd have a two car Daihatsu garage. I'd have the high jet. They all did those little Kai car type pickups, Honda Acti and Daihatsu high jet. The Daihatsu high jet, little two seat cab, tiny little itsy bitsy little payload, and a Terios. Terios is just, it's so small, but it's a proper car. It's got four wheel drive, has got some ground clearance.
There's a bit of a theme here. Do you think everyone that worked at Daihatsu was like my size, was two-thirds size? Because you've got the Copen, you've got the Cappuccino. Well, they just ickle people.
Get into a Terios. I've driven a Terios.
To Japan, they're all little.
No, I can drive a Terios.
Neil Clifford. I love all these brilliant cars you're mentioning. But for me, Daihatsu is about two cars. First of all, the four track. The Daihatsu.
Well, that's the obvious one.
It's. It deserves to be a hero car. My sister-in-law had one new, and it lasted for something like 26 years. It's just unbreakable. Made a Land Rover Defender look like the piece of crap it is. So, you know, I think fair play to that. But there was one car, I can remember, one of those beautiful moments when someone is driving you in their new car and they want to demonstrate the performance prowess of their vehicle. This would be the early 90s, probably. And I was with someone who had a Peugeot 205 GTI 1.6. It's brand new. And we were at the traffic lights. And he said to me, I was a little boy then, said, watch this. It's going to smoke this thing to the right of me. It's so fast. And the car to the right of us was white. And it just went off into the distance like a scolded cat. And it was a Charade GTTI, the little 1 litre motherfucker they had. This bloke was so, he was like, yeah, we're going to dust this little rice rocket to my right. And it just drove away from it in a straight line.
That's a good
one. It was so fast. And they always looked like they'd been kicked up the bottom. They were a bit hyena-ish. Their arse was low, like a dog that had done something wrong. And I just think they're wonderful. They're just a brilliant, quirky piece of Japanese engineering. And they had a one-make rally series for them as well.
Yes.
Which my co-driver, the wonderful Brynmore Pierce, said he bought one of these things. He referred to it as being virtually undrivable on a stage. And they had like 30 of them in the Welsh forest with these brilliantly talented Welsh people trying not to die in hitting a tree. So Daihatsu is one of those companies that has a wonderful story. And I think some of the vehicles represent that as well. So there we go. We've covered what's your favourite Daihatsu. So now, this is a very, very strange one. All I got from Chris Cooper was, can we play my service station cheese game? This is not about personal hygiene. This is something else. Over to Chris Cooper.
I thought we're doing it next week.
Oh, shit. We're doing it next week.
We'll do it next week. No cheating.
Save your cheese. Save your cheese.
Let's move straight to the two-car garage. Hold on. I've got to read it. Here we go. Where was it?
You want me to do it? I got it here.
Yeah, you might need to do it. Go on. Away you go. I can't find it on here. Oh, no, okay, I've got it. Here we go.
So, Edward, it was on your Kim's website.
Yeah.
The you're two-car... You're a plumber.
Oh, sorry. Knows,
plumbers don't drive Porsches. However, you run a very successful business and have decided to update the garage with a couple of interesting cars. You have a girlfriend. However, she drives a Golf. And you don't need to cater for her. But you do need something practical for the Monday to Friday job, plus a weekend car to put some spice back into your life. You're a fan of American, Australian muscle cars and Japanese workhorses. Your budget is £130,000. Plumbers earn a lot of money. I would like to hear what Edward Lovett has to say.
So, you did cover he has a penchant for Australian American muscle in there, yes. Didn't you? You did, yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. Sorry, let me just get my notes up here. So I think as the plumber, he's obviously going to want to lob some stuff in the back. And so I'm going to appease his desires for Australian muscle. So he's going to have a Maloo HSV. So he can lob stuff in the back for his working day. Sorry if that's annoyed you, Christopher. And then the American muscle, because I'm not saying all plumbers are dodgy, but you know there's got to be quite a few dodgy plumbers out there. Apologies for all of you non-dodgy plumbers, and congratulations to you dodgy plumbers that are out there enjoying your cars. But I wanted to give him something that he might find useful one day, which is a Dodge Charger Challenger jailbreak.
The jailbreak sign on that dashboard.
Exactly. With 807 brake horsepower.
Okay, Manish Pandey, what are your two cars?
Do you remember I spent a summer selling Mitsubishis while I was still a medical student? And the one that I always really liked the most, it wasn't the Starion, but it was the Galant. And I think they did turn that into a rally car, didn't they, at some point?
The
VR4 was a homologation car.
So I did really like the look of it. I actually quite like the gearbox. And I figured last week, you know, the poor guy was hauling around hors d'oeuvres while trying to stay kind of incognito. This week, he's going to need an estate of some description that has all the sort of J joints and U joints and everything else. And I did see one of these. I thought it was just called the Galant Estate, but it is actually called the Legnum. And I like
that. Yes, that is nice.
The Mitsubishi Legnum. Now, it turns out you can only import them. So you have to import these things. And they're not that expensive. They go from about 5 or 6. I'm going to do that again. It's in focus now. Oh, now you miss what it looks like.
That is the Galant.
Yeah.
It's a Galant. It's Galant Estate, basically. It's really, I think it's great. They had a version of this. It's the VR4 Estate, 2.5 litres. I think it's 200 and something horsepower, four-wheel drive. It's got a Momo steering wheel and proper Recaro seats. I think I'd want one of those as a plumber. And you've got the big boot at the back, so you can get the loo in. And then, do you remember watching Mad Max and falling in love with the whole idea of the Outback and going at 200 miles an hour through that? I mean, that film was basically a Western about oil. It was such a great movie. And because I'd never really sort of associated Australia with muscle cars. I mean, I just hadn't. And I remember the first Aussie muscle car that a friend of mine sent a photo of when he moved to Melbourne. And it was the Ford Falcon GT.
And it was just, I never, you know, just there's something about it that's sort of European American. What I was shocked to find out is that this plumber couldn't afford one. They go from about £150,000 to £1 million. I mean, that, so he had to look down a bit. And I'll tell you what I found. It was the GM Holden Turana LX. Ooh. And this, I think this is great looking. Look at, it's doing it again. Look at that.
Yeah.
It's not it.
It's just really that's what I would get. I would get this Holden Turana LX. And I would pretend to be Mad Max every weekend, burning up everything in Shrewsbury or wherever I was a plumber.
Neil Clifford.
Right, well, this plumber's a mate of mine. And we've gone for curry, and he's like, I've got this 130 grand. You know, I like Japanese things, I like Aussie things. And I'd say, don't be such an idiot. You don't want any of those bloody things. You can never love the Japanese car. And what the hell is an Australian car? It doesn't really exist. So,
American or Australian?
I would.
Are we trying to offend entire nations on this?
No. I'm giving him advice.
Continents.
I'm giving him advice on how best to spend his £130,000 on a two-car garage, but he will never get bored with these two cars, and you will love them forever and get immense pleasure out of them. So that's how I approach this and ignored the Japanese Aussie thing. So I would buy for my daily a BMW 1M. Because it's just, that car gets better looking by the hour, doesn't it? Some of us have maybe owned one. We wish we still owned one. I've got a very cool friend called Luke who's had one forever and would never sell it in the orange. It's just a handsome bloody car before BMW went all a little bit shit. So I would definitely have that. That's about 40 grand, right?
Yeah.
They've never been, you know, they've never been anything different apart from 40 to 45 grand, have they? So you never lose any money on the bloody thing. And then, so I've got, what have I got? 90 grand left. That's quite tough. What would you go and buy to have immense fun for 90 grand? You can look at Ferrari. You can look at Lamborghini. You can, you know, you can't look at Porsche because of the plumber thing. You know, I'm going to buy a McLaren. Before McLaren went ugly. So I'd buy a 650S Spider. I think, you know, you can't afford a 675, but you know what? It's almost a 675. Everyone's watched the Chris Harris video a million times about how the 650 is just quite a lot better, even though it might be not the original iPhone of the 12C. It's a better car. It's fast as hell. You can take the roof off, but it's a metal roof. You get a good one that's been looked after. It's not really going to break. And for 130 grand, you've got 10 years of extreme pleasure because you've ignored the brief.
And luckily, he's a plumber, so he can fix all those hoses that keep firing.
Yeah, exactly.
How does he put his plumbing rods for the weekly job?
Those two cars are brilliant.
Okay. Chris Cooper, where are you going to
put your... Well, I have actually answered the brief, but I'm just going to make a quick parish notice before, if I can. I mentioned this earlier. I said Edward. So there's a car on the auction website now. It's a 2007 997 Turbo. It's a single-owner car, and the single owner of that car was a very, very close friend of ours who very sadly died very suddenly at the end of last year from an aortic dissection, apparently. Literally dropped down dead. So we've helping his widow, who's a good friend of ours. So the car's gone on the website. She needs to sell it. And to support her and the charity behind it, I would like everyone to bid on that car, please. It's a wonderful car, one owner, 997, grey with that lovely terracotta inside. I will match the buyer's premium as a donation to a charity of her choice, which is the Aortic Dissection Charitable Trust. So it's a lovely car. It's in our shed here right now. If anyone's come to look at it, contact Collecting Cars website. Come and have a look at it here. The buyer's premium.
The manual 997 Turbo.
The one owner manual 997 Turbo.
That's rocking horse shit, people. That they're rare things. They're special.
And we and we collecting cars will donate the buyer's premium to the same charity.
Well, that's super kind, Edward. That's very, very kind of you. And Mel will be very, very kind. So
Edward, it ends on Monday, I believe.
It's on Monday, yeah, Edward. Thank you. Super kind, Edward. Thank you. I listened to the brief of my plumber friend. And I think there are two. I think he'd have as his workhorse an FJ62 Land Cruiser, but slightly titified by these outfit TLC, who do these slightly restored, resto modded FJ62s. Really nice thing. Get a nice one of those, about 75K. He's a plumber. He's a fan of muscle cars. He's going to have a C3 Corvette, a Neil Armstrong Special, 1969. I found one, 1969. About 75k, so that comes 150k, but he's a plumber, he'll knock him down, and that's what he'd have. He'd have a lovely FJ62 and a Neil Armstrong Special C3 Corvette.
Nice.
Edward, have you been, Edward?
I've been, yes.
Been, Manish's been, Chris Cooper's been, so it's just me. Right, okay. So I'm going to allow this as an opportunity to recommend a car that I see around now and again. I think they're cool as hell. They don't fit with anything the addicts should be proposing or talking about, but I think he should have a VW ID Buzz because I love them. It's the coolest electric car on the road. Yeah. They look bollocks. Go and get an ID Buzz. We should all have one. I just
they think are cool.
It's the only acceptable electric vehicle for me. I know they've got no range and everyone hates them, but I keep seeing them and they make me smile.
Likewise. Yeah.
So I think ID Buzz for me. So I love an Aussie muscle car, and Edward and I have just come back, and I got to drive an HSV GTS RW. What a bit of kit that was. Cool. The snarling bloody muscle saloon, but it's too expensive. I haven't got the budget. I'd love one. And I was going to go for an HSV GTS, but then I thought, it's not the best muscle saloony thing I've ever driven, which was, by miles, the Camaro ZR1 that I had. Z28 that I had for 2-3 years myself. That car, 2014, if you could get one of those, what a machine that is.
Yeah,
so
D28
and an ID Buzz.
We sold that W1 this morning last night in Australia, and it's coming to Blighty.
Is it? What did it go for?
$235,000 or something like that.
Wow. What the? I mean, wow.
Yeah.
Well done, the Australian collecting cars team.
Yeah, that's mega.
It's so, let's move on to some music. I'll ask Edward Lovett, and he'll say, I don't want to do music. So, Edward, any music or not?
Yes, I do, actually. I was trying to decide something. I wanted to go old this time, or older than I normally go. So I've gone Don McLean, American Pie.
Oh, okay. There you go. Just round the campfire, coming of age, all that. I can imagine you and Neil Clifford round the campfire, exchanging stories, Neil singing falsetto. Right, what are we going to go for? Neil Clifford.
Oh, you know what? I was in a band once, and I was thinking about this, and I was a keyboard player, but then the band disbanded, and 3 days later, it restarted without a keyboard player. So
I don't like that band.
I think it was more my skills or lack of as a keyboard player. But anyway, we used to cover a lot of Stranglers.
Oh.
And you know, you can name a million bloody songs from the Stranglers, but No More Heroes, the Stranglers, great song. It's one of the best ends of any song ever.
Yeah.
Is that the Rosses looking for you?
No, it's just a bloke. As there's a bloke in an M140i, you see in the rearview mirror. M140i's are becoming quite rogue, aren't they? And Manish Pandey, what are you going to go for?
I'm going to go for Lavi Sifri, My Song. A song so beautiful, so cool, and so wonderful that even the great Kanye West had to sample it to create another piece of music. It is the most beautiful song.
That before he had his titanium teeth inserted.
Well, exactly. Yes, exactly. Before he became Toothcote from Breaking Bad.
His titanium mono tooth. Inspired by Jaws from the James Bond movies. The shark has rather truly jumped on that one. Chris Cooper.
So I always like to think about something I'd like to listen to. And I was thinking about when this first came out. It's Creep by Radiohead.
Oh, that's good.
Great.
There's a bit early in the song, I'm not a musical colossus. There's a bit early in that song where it meanders along And then the guitarist gives a couple of big thwacks, whatever they're called, on the strings of his guitar, which I like to think is me in a car changing down two gears, big whap on the throttle for each of those thwacks. And then you're off and you're sort of like flowing through the bends. Great song to drive to. Creep by Radiohead.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go 80s and a bit of quirky Frenchness, because they now and again they come out with a tune that just crossed language barriers. Voyage, Voyage by Desireless.
Ooh, is great song.
It's a great driving song. Put it on. It's got rhythm and it just suits driving. It's one of those, and you know, and her voice is stunning. So thank you very much.
I'm just going to end on one recommendation. As we've just come back and we've still got Australian petrol running through our veins, go onto YouTube and watch last weekend's Bathurst 12-hour recap on YouTube. A fucking race that was.
I was going to suggest the same thing, and there's an uncorked Merc GT3.
Yeah. Unrestricted Merc. Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
How on it was he? Yeah.
Up against the walls. And for me, one piece of housekeeping. I shared this with my fellow Alex. A guy called Neil sent a little note to us. I won't read it out. It's personal. About listening to some of our playlists as he'd collected his new Caterham track day toy. And Neil, your note touched a nerve with all of us. It was heartfelt. We thank you for listening, like we do to all of you. So we'll see you, or you'll hear from us next week for episode 54. Thank you for being with us. Myself, Chris Harris, Neil Clifford, Chris Cooper, Manish Pandey, and Edward Lovett. Thank you very much for listening.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.